This is your weekly rundown, episode 64. Let's get it. All right, welcome back. This is Weekly Rundown, episode 64. It's me and Dan here today. How you doing, howdy. Dan?
Doing good, man. Doing good. A little tired, a little howdy, you know. Getting ready to fly out to Michigan tomorrow. So a little spoiler alert. The DGens episode is going to release a little late. So just keep your eyes out for it either Thursday night or Friday.
Yeah, but definitely come through for it because I think we're going to have a pretty fun time, Dan and myself are.
So. Yeah, we have an interesting topic, so it should be fun.
A very interesting topic. But yeah, the best way to support us, we always say this in the beginning of the episode, is to rate the podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to it. Tell your friends about us. We know you got some anime friends. We know they want to hear us bullshit about anything, you know. So make sure you tell them. If you have any topics or questions about the latest episodes of any of our rundown shows, let us know as well in Discord or any of our socials. Linktree.com/AnimeDGens. And on this episode, we got Kaiju number 8, episode 2, Go-Go Loser Ranger, episode 3, Spice and Wolf Remake, episode 3, and One Piece, episode 1101. And if you're ready, Dan, we will get started with Kaiju number 8, episode 2.
Let's do it. Go for it.
Hell yeah. So on this episode, we watch as Kafka struggles to figure out his new body while trying not to be killed by the Kaiju Defense Force. How long will he be able to hide in his new form? We won't know, probably.
Probably not for a while.
So it's interesting because me and Bass kind of like ragged on like the OP and ED last episode, but the OP didn't really drop with the episode. We just like listened to the song on YouTube or whatever. And honestly, when the OP dropped this episode, like it kind of hit hard. Like the visuals kind of looked unique. I don't know if I want to say good, but definitely unique. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, it was definitely unique. Like when it first starts, and there's that like red with that weird kaiju-y looking ball thing in it. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, and like I said, the way they like transitioned into it, like it actually made the song fit, I guess. So I'm kind of a fan of it now. After like shitting on it pretty hard last week. So
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it compares to Go-Go Loser Ranger's opening, but it's good.
Yeah, so I just thought, you know, it would be nice for me to, you know, kind of say that I changed my mind a little bit, so. But, yeah, we actually get a little flashback starting this episode off with Kafka saying some anime protagonist type shit and getting embarrassed for it when with Mina back in the day. So that made me think, like, have you ever said anything like that when you was younger since, like, you grew up watching anime and shit like that?
I mean, I still say things like that. You've heard me a million times say, my drill is the drill that's going to pierce the heavens, dude.
But what I'm asking is, did you say shit like that and get embarrassed by it when you was younger? Because if you're like me, you don't get embarrassed by it anymore. You just say it. Just say it. You
know? I don't know. Like, I can't recall, like, me ever being, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I ever did that as a kid. And you gotta remember, like, when we were kids, we had to hide our fandom of anime, yeah. Or else we got bullied. So I don't think I ever did that.
Yeah, and it's crazy you mentioned that. We actually had this one chick at our school, like, she would literally go around acting like she was Luffy. And like I would just watch and people would pick on her for it, and like she still did it, so like shout out to her, like she did it no matter what people thought, so, and she didn't care people said mean things to her, so it was pretty fun. So
I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you, if I saw some chick running around my elementary school going gum gum pistol and throwing her arm around, I would probably make fun of her too.
This wasn't elementary school, by the way. This was a high school.
Oh, that's even worse. Bro.
But yeah, I just thought about that for some reason. I definitely wasn't one of those people. I mean, I carried around my Yu-Gi-Oh cards or whatever and played duels and shit, but like I didn't go around yelling gum gum like she did. So
gum gum, take this test.
But yeah, getting back to the episode though, Mina's squad is closing in on the hospital. And we actually get some funny scenes from Kafka and Ishikawa. And we haven't really seen this yet, but did you expect them to go this hard on humor? And did you enjoy it?
I absolutely loved it. Like, I was not expecting this at all. Like, it was such a serious scene. And then, like, the old guy is freaking out in the doorway. And Ichikawa is like, smile. And Kafka turns his head and he like throws like the scariest face on you could imagine in this situation. Like his tongue is doing shit you don't even want to think about. And the old man literally just passes out of fear. I was crying.
Yeah. I was honestly dying laughing. I just don't know where this come from. Cause like episode one was such a different vibe. And then episode two, within the first 5 minutes, we're doing like parody type shit, right? Like that's what it feels like. Gintama type shit, right?
I mean, I wouldn't say Gintama type stuff. It's just they're interjecting humor really well. I mean, the scene where they're running from the hospital and Kafka's like, I have to pee.
Bro.
and he's like, you need to hold it. And he's like, I can't, my body's gonna do it on its own. And all of a sudden he starts pissing out of his nipples and he has like the greatest look on his face ever. I was crying. I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, and they also like changed the like when that started happening, they changed like the background scene or whatever to like the pink or whatever, and like played the weird music.
Oh, dude, he was in pure bliss, man.
Yeah, but like, so speaking of that, like I thought this show was kind of gonna be like dark and serious and bloody and stuff like that. Was I wrong? Like, did you have any idea it was going to be like this much comedy in it?
I thought they were going to include it pretty well. I didn't think it was going to be like this. And I mean, I definitely still think we're going to get a darker side to this. And it's still, I mean, obviously it gets very bloody.
Yeah.
In this episode. But like, I like the way they're balancing it out, I guess.
Yeah. So you think it's pretty balanced? Like you don't think you're, what I'm trying to say is like, you don't, You're still liking it, you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I thought it was like the way they would just randomly throw some stupid shit in there was hilarious.
Yeah, because we got it like all throughout this episode, so yeah, which was pretty interesting.
And I thought it was funny too because we thought Go-Go Loser Ranger was gonna have a lot of humor in it.
Yeah,
and I feel like we're getting more humor in Kaiju Number 8.
Yeah, definitely based off the second episode. The first episode, not like it's a total swap. You know, it's totally different from the first episode. But I guess you introduce the kaiju aspect to it or whatever. Like, you have more ways to joke, I guess. So, but while they're trying to run, another kaiju actually pops up and starts going crazy a few blocks away. And at this time, like, did you think, you know, kaiju, Kafka was actually trying to run away or hide. That's what Ichikawa wanted to do. Did you think he was going to go fight it? Like, I did, so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. Like, once he saw his, like, spidey senses kick in and he could, like, notice that there was something coming out of the ground, I don't know if he has, like, I don't know if he heard screaming or what, but I knew he was going to go save someone. Like, that just made sense.
Yeah, and they done, like, that little fake out or whatever. Like, he's going to go, you know, hide or whatever. And then he, next thing you know, he's saving the little girl and her mother. So,
yep.
One thing I did want to mention is, like, as Kafka's killing the kaiju and is, like, protecting the people, the music starts playing, like, the background music. And I just want to say, like, the OST and the background music in this show, it actually, they do actually good job. Like the first episode, they, when the chopper was coming down and stuff, they did background music phenomenal as well. So, like, are you liking it too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I haven't been like focusing on it too much, but now that you say it, I'll have to pay a little more attention in the third episode.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it because it makes you feel more hyped, I think. So, and then we actually turns out that Ichikawa and Kafka passes the first round of the Defense Force test. And we also learned that Kafka always fails on the second part. I'm guessing it's like a physical part of the test, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was funny when, like, they were all like, oh, who's going to break the news to him? And then he gets it, and they're like, oh, he always passes in the first time. Like, why are these guys freaking out?
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, it's part of the show, I guess, you know? And I'm just kind of curious, like, since this second part's going to be more physical or whatever, and we see him struggle to keep his kaiju form down, like, under control. Do we think, like, he's gonna, when do we think he's gonna let it slip, like, the kaiju form come out, especially when he's under physical, like, duress or whatever?
So, my thing is, I don't know if the kaiju form is gonna come out mid-test, but I'm curious to see if he can, like, hold back his strength, if that makes sense. Like, is he that strong when he is in his human form? Because if he is, he's gonna look like a fucking psychopath during this test.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to know too, is if, like, when he's in human form, can he use that strength or hearing, or can he use the benefits of being a kaiju as he's a human form? So, except for the peeing part, that's still kind of weird.
No, man, dude, that was hilarious. I mean, like, in this scene when Ichikawa shows up and, like, Kafka is in his kaiju form on top of this dead kaiju, and he's, like, eating a bento box, and he's like, you can't be in your kaiju form, bro. And he changes his face back, but he still has, like,
the teeth.
He looks like Katakuri, dude. And I was cracking up. I was cracking up, like, oh my god, is he about to eat a donut next?
I'm really excited to see how they play this out, because I think they have, like, a lot of potential to do a lot of things with this show, a lot of fun things with this show. So
definitely. I mean, like, going back to Kafka's strength, when he punched the kaiju and the whole thing just exploded and it rained blood, I was like, we just went from laughing our asses off to watching him literally, like, create a Slayer song, like, mid-episode with raining blood. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now, guys? Like, this is going from, like, funny to absolutely gory carnage. And then, like, there were some weird scenes too, like when he ate the crow.
Yeah,
when he was, like, in his, like, I don't even know what the fuck to call that form, like, 15 different kaijus, and he eats the crow, and it had it, like, it was censored, and that kind of threw me off a little bit. So I guess they can't show animals getting killed in Japan now,
maybe, unless they just... So, like, they've censored a few things. They censored, like, the intestines scenes or whatever. They censored this. So I wonder if it's, like, maybe they think it's insensitive, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm not sure, but all I can think about when he was in that whatever form he was in is, like, the Snickers commercial. You know, like, you're not you when you're hungry type shit.
Yeah,
that's all I wanted.
Instead of a Snickers, he needs a bird.
Yeah, and, like, the little thing just come out of his mouth, grabbed a bird, and then, like, he went back to his form. He's like, I don't know what's happening. Yeah, we don't know either, so. But, yeah, we skip forward 10 days to the second round of the test. We also meet Shinomiya, the blonde pigtail girl, who's taking the test as well. And did you like her? Like, did you like the first impression she gave? And do you think she's going to play a major part in this, major role in this show?
Yeah, I definitely think she's gonna. I'm like, I didn't like her character too much. She's kind of a bitch.
Oh, she's definitely a bitch.
She's kind of a bitch. Definitely a bitch. But when she like used her like super suit powers and lifted up a fucking truck, I was like, oh, this girl's gonna be a menace.
So you think it's like all the suit? You don't think it's like her, she's got powers or some shit?
Yeah, I think these are just normal people. So I think it's just she has, she seems like she's a rich, spoiled brat.
Oh, okay.
So I think she has like strength augmenting gear on.
Yeah, I didn't expect her to, like, when she picked up his car or whatever, I didn't expect her to just toss it. I thought she was going to put it, like, move it and put it down in another spot. But she, like, just, like, literally just tossed it. And why would you go out of your way to do something like that to, like, another human being, right?
Because that's her parking spot.
But it's not.
But it had number 5 on it, dude. It was her parking spot. Or 55.
Yeah, that was wild to me. The fact that she, like, I don't know. That's bad first impressions for, like, the whole test, right?
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, definitely. No, she's not going to be a crowd favorite by any means. Well, maybe for viewers, but not for the people taking the test.
Yeah, okay. Maybe she's like an Uber type deal. So
maybe, but I thought it was weird or kind of crazy that she could like smell the kaiju on him. That was kind of nuts.
Yeah. And that kind of has me worried for her boy. Cause, she says he smells like one. So will he be able to stay cool, calm and collected under pressure? Or is he going to like change? And I just wonder when he's going to get found out. Cause it's gotta be soon, right?
Well, yeah, I feel like he's going to get found out eventually, and then they're going to use him to fight the kaiju. Obviously, I mean, that's the plot of the freaking show.
Yeah.
But I'm curious how fast it happens. I do want to go back to the bird scene one more time, though, because have you seen, like, the old Alien movies? Like, Alien vs. Predator, all the Alien movies?
It's been a long time.
Bro, so. That his alien tongue? Straight out of Alien, the Alien series. I was cracking up when I saw it.
Really? Like the like tremor type shit or whatever, the worm type shit?
No, the inner jaw of like the Alien movies. Like, hold on, I'll show you a picture. Like, you can see it, kind of. Not really, because it's blurred.
Is that kaiju or like
the? No, that is a movie from the 80s.
Oh, I was going to say that literally looks like.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it might be, bro.
Dude, definitely where they got the inspiration there.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a pretty fun episode. It leaves me wanting to see episode 3 like a lot. Are you enjoying the live aspect? I'm pretty sure you watched it live, right?
Yeah, I did watch it live. The subtitles were a little funky because it was like live subtitles. So I went back and watched it again today, and it was better. So I think I'm gonna wait until we get the official subtitles.
Okay, so the subtitles is just whack?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't whack. They were like 80% there. Like, there were scenes where people would be talking and it wouldn't pick them up.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I missed a few things in my first watch. I mean, like, I didn't really miss anything, but, like, there was definitely dialogue I couldn't read.
I bet the dubbed live is better to watch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but, like, I'm not really a big fan, like, the dubbed is okay, but the subbed is way better in this show, I think. So,
but, have you watched the dubbed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, I've watched like 5 minutes of the first episode or so, and then I watched. I accidentally started watching dubbed this episode, and I was like, "What am I doing? Why am I watching the dubbed?" And, yeah. And then I switched it to the subbed, and like it was immediate. Like I don't know, I just like it so much better. So,
gotcha. It's still cool that they're doing both simultaneously, though. That's good for everybody who doesn't really want to watch like a subtitle or read subtitles, you know?
Yeah, but that is all I got for Kaiju number 8. It should be a fun episode next week. So,
awesome! You ready to get into Go Go Loser Ranger?
Yep.
Awesome. So we got episode 3 coming at you this week. Our evil will bloom someday. So we got a pretty action-packed episode this week. We got a little espionage, a little breaking and entering, some unexpected deaths, and a stolen divine artifact. It was pretty nutty. Like, a lot, like, way too much happened in this episode. Like, it was all over the place. And I wasn't here last week, and I just want to say this ED is fucking phenomenal. Have you seen the ending yet? Did you watch it?
I have. You caught me off guard, so...
Dude, it's like a J-pop sequence with the Power Rangers, or the Dragon Keepers and the fighters. And, like, the way they, like, go in between them is so good.
So, like, I'm rating, like, the... I'm getting ahead of myself right now. I'm rating the... kind of giving myself a rating for the EDs and OPs as I go this time. That way I gotta try to figure out later. And apparently I got the... Go Lucid Ranger ED as my top of the season at like almost a 9. So,
nah, hell yeah, dude. The song's a bop and the choreography for the dancing is super fun. Like, I just, like I said, I didn't know I needed like a J-pop, K-pop dance sequence with these characters.
I'll have to pay more attention to it next time.
Oh, geez, the dancing is phenomenal.
I was in a hurry this time. I just literally just got to watch it just like, what, 40 minutes ago. So,
oh, you're good, man. But cool. So after seeing the death of Fighter F, D leaves the scene pretty angrily. He's pursued by Sakurama, and it turns out that Sakurama like overheard D and Susukiri's conversation about him being a monster. And I was really surprised by this. Like, I thought Sakurama was going to be an idiot.
Yeah.
So the fact that he caught on to this and actually caught that conversation, like, good for him, man.
Yeah, and then the whole thing, so it kind of confused me there for a minute. Like, then he's like, okay, you passed or whatever, right? And like, was he joking about hearing what they said, or like, well, what's going on there, you think?
No, I don't think he was joking. I mean, like, he sounds like he really wants to create a world where monsters and humans can live together. So
okay.
I think that, like, he thinks with having D in the Ranger Force, they can create that world. Or he's a scumbag, and he's using this to get D in front of the Rangers so they can kill him.
Yeah, okay.
One or two. But, like, he doesn't seem like that schemey, you know?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't. Like, it surprised me a lot for him to talk about, you know, him to come up and say, oh yeah, by the way, I know what's going on, bro.
Yeah, like that really, I did not expect that.
Yeah, I'm loving this show for those reasons. Like, it's catching me off guard a lot.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And after that, you know, D basically just goes like, hey, fuck you, buddy. We're enemies. Fuck off. And just turns to dust and floats away. And then we go straight just watching Susukiri eating pancakes. And D says, like, hey, I'm pretty much using you to get this divine artifact. When we're done, I'm cutting you off. And she takes a butter knife to his dome and straight just lobs his head off in public. Like, that caught me off guard, too. I was not expecting that.
I just don't understand what D gets out of telling people this. Like, I know he's, like, you know, a peon, but at least think about shit sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you gotta have your boss mentality going when you're in these situations, you know?
Like, you just don't tell people, oh, I'm just using you, and then I'm gonna cut you off. But literally, she's stronger than you, bro. She's literally using you.
Yeah, man. And, like, I mean, dude, Susukiri, probably my favorite character in this anime so far. I mean, like, she's just, like, the perfect amount of crazy. And that lifeless look in her eyes, it's just, it's doing something for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out. Is it because her, like, eyes are all one color and they're so big?
They're just black and lifeless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm really enjoying her character, like, too, by the way.
If it turns out that she's a fucking robot or something, I'm not going to be surprised.
She's actually a fighter, bro. Or a duster, whatever. But
so after that, they have a conversation about the divine artifacts, which are the only weapons capable of defeating the immortal monsters. And they kind of hatch up a plan to steal one. And while this, you know, Susie Curie basically talks about how the Ranger organization is really top heavy. And while they have people under them, they're all incredibly weak. And she uses like a Jenga reference, or the anime uses a Jenga reference to show that if you can knock the bottom down, everything is going to come crashing down. And I really liked that. I thought that was really cool, like use of visualization for like the conversation.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. I don't think I've ever seen Jenga used in anime before.
It's always shogi.
Yeah, but I mean, this was a perfect use of that. So maybe because like they're talking about like Power Rangers and shit, kind of, you know. So,
I mean, they're in Japan. I mean, Jenga's an international game at this point, right?
You would think so. Maybe it's called something different. I don't know. But I mean, Jenga is like, it does seem like a Japanese word, to be honest with you. So
maybe it is a Japanese game. I don't know. I know we have it in America. I can find Jenga anywhere, but so Susie Curie, when they're hatching this plan, she says that the only time the Rangers don't have the divine artifacts is during the Sunday showdown, because they can't actually kill all the cannon fodder or else this plan just goes to ruin. So they use like a fake version during the show, and the real ones are stored at the bases. They come up with their plan. D's going to transform and take on the appearance of the Red Keeper and break into HQ. We're going to get a little Ocean's 11 scene here. No, I'm just kidding. We're not getting that. But he's going to go attempt to steal the divine artifact. And one thing I really thought was funny, and I thought you were going to really enjoy this scene, is when they were talking about why she wants to do this, she brought up how teenage romance dramas, how you know who's going to get together at the beginning and the losers never win. And she wants to change things up a little bit. And I felt like that scene was kind of calling you out a little bit, dude.
You know, I actually enjoyed the reference. And like when I was thinking about like who I was thinking about who she thought she was, like, so she don't like Red, the main Red guy, because he is like the main character, right? And she wants to like topple that because she hates when that happens, the trope happens or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming she wants to be at the top. And what I got out of it is she wants to be Dee's girlfriend.
I don't know about that, but that's kind of how they're showing. And I was curious with the chick, the other girl they had. I was like, is that supposed to be the Pink Ranger? Because we haven't seen her face yet.
I mean, you talking about like the girl on the
in the front
primary thing or whatever?
Yeah, during this whole like romance thing, it had like Susie Curie in the back, and then it had another girl in the front. And I think it was supposed to be the Pink Ranger because I think they had the same hair color. And I was like, I kind of like this. Is funny. This is great.
Yeah, like I said, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying like all the little references, like referencing tropes, you know, like that's kind of crazy.
They keep breaking the fourth wall too, which is fantastic. Like, I love that stuff.
But yeah, I definitely enjoyed that scene just because, you know, I know what they're talking about. So
definitely. So D breaks into the base or whatever to try and track down this divine artifact. Did you notice the weird little dragon looking creature in the base?
Yeah. I don't know what that is, though.
No, I don't either. So I'm curious to see what happens with that thing.
Yeah, like we haven't seen anything like that. My first initial thoughts was like it was some kind of like camera system or like guardian type thing, like lets people know if somebody goes by this door, whatever. So I don't know.
I wasn't sure. I was like, is that a monster? Like, I was like, is that a little kaiju we got going on here? But I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, wrong show though.
No, they're calling the nefarious monsters kaijus this whole time, dude.
What if that's another duster?
Maybe. Or like the one of the bosses who was defeated, but he like didn't die entirely. No, he's just like living as a little dragon monster thingy.
Maybe. Who knows?
But Dean makes it down into the basement where the divine artifact is supposed to be, and he runs into Tokita, who is that clown ass dude with the weird face paint. What a weirdo. And he basically is like, oh, I got to go to the divine artifact. I got to go turn into the Red Ranger for the show, all this stuff. And one thing I thought was really cool here was that D turned his finger into a key to open the door. Like, he has some pretty, like, he should just, like, leave this behind and go be a jewel thief, because he would make racks.
I mean, he could be a whole lot of different things, you know, and not have to worry about dying. But he's so caught up on, like, being mad at the Rangers for humiliating them for so long or whatever, you know?
Yeah. But he makes it into the back room, and he finds the divine artifact in a golf bag with a bunch of golf clubs. Like, this threw me off. I mean, this is one of the strongest weapons in the world, and you're just throwing it in your golf bag? Like, should this thing be under lock and key?
It was, right? Well, but it was like a storage closet type shit.
Yeah, why are you putting it in a fucking golf bag, dude? Next to, like, your 9-iron.
I mean, it's what Suzukiri, like, was talking about. Like, they have no worries, right?
That's true. That's still a funny spot to put a freaking mega sword.
Maybe he's practicing his swing with it, you know?
He's using that salamandra move to just hit drives.
Yeah.
But after D pulls out the sword, Tokita shows up, and he's like, I knew this was suspicious. You smelt funny. You didn't smell like my boy here. And first off, who knows what their boss smells like? That's fucking sus, dude. That's just weird.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he wears, like, the same cologne all the time or something. Because, you know, boy D doesn't know that, because he literally figured out what he should look like based off of a newspaper or whatever, right?
Yeah. But Tokita just starts hitting him with the laser blicky in the head. And I laughed during this scene, which I kind of felt bad about. But the fact that every time D tried to talk, he just got his head blown off over and over and over and over again had me cracking up, dude. I was like, damn, poor man can't even get a word in.
I mean, it's the dude, I keep on wanting to call him Hisoka. He don't care what he says, you know? So
yeah. There was one line that Tokita said during all of this, which I thought was really interesting. And he brought up that the monsters will never defeat the humans because they're immortal. And the fear of death is what makes humans grow. And, like, that's like evolution 101. So I thought it was interesting how he brought that up here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is a good point of view to look at, because, you know, having the fear of dying is what makes people, like, able to achieve, do things, you know, because they're afraid of dying. Like, I don't know. It's just common sense, I feel like, that people that die would have more potential than people that don't, because they have different, I guess, point of views, different mentalities.
Yeah, survival of the fittest definitely comes in there. Yeah. But after that, I was pretty surprised to see D just pull out a few sticks of dynamite and just scare the shit out of Tokita. He's like, oh yeah, man, you want to blow my head off? How about this? You're going to go with me, buddy. And
I almost wonder if, like, that was like dust shit. Like, fake.
That would be crazy if he just made fake dynamite. Because, like, at the time, we didn't know he could make inanimate objects with his dust.
We still, well, I mean, yeah, we yeah, now, you're right. Yeah, he did it after. So,
like, if that was just dust, that's even better, man. I mean, he scared the shit out of Tokita. Tokita dropped his gun, and then D took a 9-iron to his dome piece, killing him, I think.
I hope so.
I think he's dead. Probably not dead, though, because that would be kind of lame. He's a good character, I feel like.
Yeah.
So
imagine what D could do if he was actually smart.
I don't know, man. D could take over the world. But after that, D takes the divine artifact and makes his way to the roof. Suzukiri has a funny thing, like, damn, I didn't know you're actually that strong. Like, that's kind of sick. But of course, waiting on the roof is none other than the Red Keeper. and him and D start going at it, and he's kind of toying with D, and D gets pissed off at this, man. Like, I kind of felt for the guy.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, it's pretty bad to get shit on, I guess, but to get shit on, like, and threatened all the time, and when you're trying your hardest, like, it's gotta feel bad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, after D got his, like, beat up a little bit, and he did that move where he, like, pulled the water tower down.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty slick. But then, of course, the Red Rangers yoked, or sorry, the Red Keeper. Whatever, Red Ranger, Red Keeper, same shit, is yoked. He just, like, hits this water tower jug out of the way with an iron pipe like a baseball. And I was like, fuck, D, you're screwed, man.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, how he was able to pull that off. Like, is his, like, build thing, like, that strong, you think?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it happen, so I guess so.
It's wild, bro.
Definitely, man. But, like, it turns out that the Red Keeper, I'm going to have a hard time with this the entire time I watch the show.
They'll understand, bro.
Yeah. But he's been holding back this whole time because the fight, there isn't an audience. And a TV helicopter shows up and starts televising the thing. So at that point, we know Red is going to get pretty serious. And conveniently as well, backup shows up. And we have every fucking keeper up there, the whole crew. He's fucked, man. Like, that's all I could think that entire time. I was like, oh, you were screwed, buddy.
One person I really like is, I don't know a whole lot about him yet, but I kind of like Blue. Not gonna lie. Blue seems, like, very fun, I guess.
Yeah, he just seems like he's, like, likes to fight. And that's my kind of character.
Yeah. So, he seems like a Bakugo type person, so.
Definitely. But, like, did you see how bad but good Red's acting was during this whole thing?
Yeah, he acted like he was hurt and everything, bro. Like, he was on his knees and just talking shit the whole time. Like, I was dying.
He's like, oh, I gotta build this up for the audience. I was like, bro, no, you don't. Don't do that to my boy.
And I loved it.
Definitely. I also thought it was really interesting that Pink recognized D as the fighter who kind of, like, defied their little charade last week. So that was interesting, too, because, I mean, they all look the fucking same.
Yeah, I mean, unless you can tell by voice, you know.
Or the convenient letters on the side of their arm, but I didn't think they'd pay attention like that, you know?
Apparently Pink does. So, I mean, I don't feel like anybody else, but have we even seen, like, anybody else but Red and Blue, like, have any, like, action?
Not really. I don't think.
So, maybe they just stand back and watch, you know? Except if you're not Red and Blue, I don't know.
I think we'll see more of them as the show goes on. But Blue uses his divine artifact and turns D into a fucking balloon. I was like, what is going on? This is a weird power to have.
Yeah.
And D explodes in the air. So he's dead, I think. But it turns out that the divine artifact that he had up on this roof was actually his arm. And the real divine artifact did fall off the roof. And we find Suzukiri has it locked away in her little caps or little base. So I'm interested to see where this goes, man.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering, like, if he, there's no way he's dead. So, like, how did he get out of it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I just can't think of a way. So
yeah, I'm excited to see that. But so I know you said you didn't watch the ending. There was a post-credit scene.
I did watch that though. I just skipped the ending because I was running out of time or whatever. So
I'm curious to see who this weird laser beam monster is, man.
Do we think that's actually the thing that we've seen sitting there by the door?
Oh, maybe. That'd be interesting. I mean, it didn't really look like it, though.
Yeah, I didn't really see the monster thing, so I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Who knows?
Awesome. You ready to get us into some Spice and Wolf?
Yeah, let's do Spice and Wolf Remake Episode 3, Port Town and Sweet Temptation. And we get our first dose of economics in this episode. We learn about coins, and we see Lawrence and Hollow in negotiating action. And basically, we start this off with the pair arriving at Pazio, a city full of nobles and merchants. But apparently, they don't have any king or any ruler of sorts. So I wonder how like they keep that keep order in that town that size without any rulers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure these merchant guilds got some enforcers. You know, they got to have somebody to go knock some knees in if people are disrupting the peace or not paying their debts, you know?
I'm wondering if the church plays a big part in it.
Oh, maybe. That'll work too. I like the idea of people breaking kneecaps.
Kind of like, like Game of Thrones, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like this, what is it, the Sept or whatever?
I could see Tony Soprano being part of this merchant guild, you know?
But Hollow actually says something. You may lose when after they get back to the hotel or the whatever the hell it's called, tavern. Hollow says you may lose many things due to greed, but you gain no benefits from abstinence. And I'm just thinking, like, is the wise part of her starting to shine now? Or, like, are we enjoying this? Are we enjoying her little quotes, I guess you can say?
Yeah, I'm enjoying them. You know, Hollow, like, I mean, that's a pretty scummy thing to say. Like, you know, you got to be greedy or else you're never going to get shit. And, you know, in the layman's terms.
I mean, you know, you literally get no benefits from not doing it, right? But I don't know. Like, it's a fun thing to think about. So, especially coming from someone like her, after she 50 apples, so it wouldn't let her boy have any of them. So,
dude, that was funny.
But then we move on, and we actually get to see our first bit of negotiations, like I said, and we also see Hollow in action as well. And do we think that she had that plan in mind with the smell of the fur coats when she bought all those apples?
I don't know. Because I think she, at first, I think she really just wanted to eat some apples. But then, like, I mean, she's got a pretty good nose. So, like, maybe after the fact she noticed and thought of it. But, like, damn, good for her. Like, she really knew how to get the price up on that shit.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely a top-tier sales wolf, I guess you call her, and her knowledge of animals are definitely like coming in clutch for negotiations, I think. And
except it was all bullshit.
Well, I mean, you know, she knows how to spin it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't sell pelts, but lying to customers is usually never a good thing, but you know, good for her, man.
But I was actually starting to doubt her ability to make money. She keeps on saying that she could make money or whatever to Lawrence whenever he would, you know, complain about her earning her keep or whatever. But she definitely showed that she could. I think she went from 140 silver trini to like 210 per coat. So that's like a difference of 70 per coat. That's,
oh, no. That was total. It was total. She went from two silver coins per pelt to three.
Okay.
Still, I mean, that's a good increase in profit right there. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is. It's still like 70 whatever. So I'm not sure like how all that works, like what the difference is and all that stuff. Kind of like what we have in the States or whatever. So, but it must have been hard. Like, speaking of that, it must have been hard during this age with like so many different coin systems. We get like a scene of Lawrence trying to explain to Hollow like what each coin is, and I was with her. Like, I was like, I'm not gonna remember this no matter how many times you tell me anime. I'm not gonna remember. So, like, do you think they have like some kind of conversion system or like even a main popular coin that people prefer? Like, what do you think is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, they make it seem like the Trenny is the gold staple because it's silver, but like it's the standard coin for like the world they live in. But it's interesting that they brought in all these different currencies that are all still made of silver, so they still all have some sort of value. it just depends which ones have more silver content. But I thought it was interesting that they're pointing at all the fakes and Hollow had no fucking clue.
And it's also like fun to notice that he had like fake coins too. So I wonder if like he got scammed one time or if he just keeps them in his pouch to know what a fake one looks like or something. I was kind of wondering why he had that in there, like kept them with him or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he uses them to scam people or he got scammed. I'm not sure.
You think he's a scammer, bro? I would never think that of our boy Lawrence.
You know, sometimes you got to hustle. Or sometimes somebody gives you a bad deal and you can't get out of it and you gotta get out of it, you know?
I guess so. It turns out the coin rumors may be true, though. They think that the silver Trini, wants to make their coins have more silver than others. That way they can become more popular, which also results in them dominating the market of foreign countries in order to make them weaker, which is kind of like the same as losing in like war is what they explained it to be without being war. So did you find all that interesting?
Yeah, it's funny because it reminds me a lot. Like, so me and Bass go on a golf trip every year and we go to Canada because the US dollar is stronger than the Canadian dollar. So we can go play really nice courses, but we spend less money because when we convert our money over, it's worth more over there. Yeah, so we're getting more bang for our buck because the US dollar is stronger. Not always, but right now it is. So it just kind of reminded me of how we used to ski. Like I've skied the system in the past. Like we'd go to Canada for like in college because it was cheaper too. Same thing, you know.
I mean, whatever's cheapest, you know. Just like just like Japan. Like people going to Japan. I seen like the dollar was worth like the most it'd been in a while in Japan. So now is like the time to buy that money. Or whatever, if you're going like soon, is what they said. So, but it's funny to think about stuff like that. Like you can do the same thing for way cheaper in different places. So
yeah,
it probably works like that here too. So,
oh yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the yen right now, and like in 2021, it was pretty much 1-1, but now it's 1-1.5. So yeah, I mean, it's gone up a good bit. That's pretty crazy.
Yep. But Hollow actually figured out that the Trini Silver, so they meet with this coin, investigator. I forget what they're called, just a coin person. And he actually had like ranging from newest to oldest, silver Trinis. And Hollow was able to like shake them and hear which one was, you know, if they was the same silver or not. And she found out that they was actually decreasing in purity, which means that Zarin, the merchant that they've been talking about to, was tricking them in some way, more than likely. And Hollow and Lawrence end up talking about it, and Lawrence seems to figure out what he's up to, and they end up rushing off to Malone Trading Company. So my thing is, like, is there someone else putting Zarin up to telling people about this change in the Silver Trini? Or, because Hollow thinks that, or is it, like, something else? Like, what do you think's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, Zarin doesn't seem like the kind of guy smart enough to pull off a scheme like that himself. So I definitely think there's someone pulling the strings on the top.
You think it's, like, another merchant, or you think it's, like, a business? Or government?
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember from when I watched it, which helps. But
I think it's someone bigger. I think it's like a company or a government or something.
Yeah. Honestly. It could be another country too, whose money isn't worth as much. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that that one that was rival to Trini, I guess. I forget what it's called though.
That would make sense.
Yeah. But I mean, Not a whole lot happened in this episode. It seems like next episode is going to be when we get to the fine details and all that stuff of this scheme, I'll call it. So, But if you don't have anything else, then we shall move on to One Piece.
Let's get to it. So let's talk One Piece 1101, the strongest form of humanity, the Seraphim's powers. So Luffy Uchiha Part 2 continues as Vegapunk tells us more about his experiments, including the Seraphim's and artificial devil fruits. So we start the episode off finding out that Sentomaru lives. He explains that he tried to defend himself, but we didn't see any of that in the last episode, and they kind of walked us through how he did it. And I mean, if I like remember, like Sentomaru has always been a defensive guy. Like he's always had one of the strongest defenses in One Piece. So yeah. I'm glad that he was able to survive this. But like, I feel like they're just trying to make Luchi seem like he's stronger than he is.
Yeah, because right now we're like thinking there's no way Luchi compares to Luffy. And I think they're trying to build him up a little bit to make him make people think that he can stand a chance. But there's no way, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, Yonko, CP0, Yonko, you know, I mean, it's not a
Gear
fair fight.
Five, you know,
literal god, leopard guy. I'll put my money on the literal god.
I'm just like, it's crazy that they literally didn't show us this in the last episode, and then they showed it in this episode. Like, how did we miss that? We didn't miss that. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
They just added it.
It just happened really fast.
I'm sure.
But the fight with Luchi continues, and we got some really cool animations here. We saw a bunch of different like forms of Gear 5. The first one we saw was like Tornado Luffy like drilling into the ground. I thought that was funny. That was straight out of Looney Tunes.
Yeah. A lot of different moments happened with this. I thought the animation in this episode was crazy. Was it not?
Oh, it was awesome. They did a really good job with it. You know, like, I mean, it's Gear 5. They got to bring out the big guns for it, you know?
Yeah. And my favorite one, like my favorite like form of Gear 5 Luffy in this episode was like the giant slash Titan type thing, Luffy. Where he's like just trying, he come out of the ground and he's trying to eat Luchi.
Oh my god, dude. You know what it reminded me? It reminded me of Gigantamax Gengar from Pokemon.
Even though I don't play like the newer versions with the Gigantamax or whatever in it.
Well, we saw
I still
when
know
we
what
watched,
you're talking about.
Yeah,
so.
Well, we saw it when we watched the final battle of Ash and Leon.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. So it definitely does somewhat remind me of that.
I think my favorite one I got to see during this, though, is Goggles Luffy. Like Luffy just manifesting goggles out of nowhere and making them just appear on his head. It's fucking hilarious. Like, I don't think he understands how powerful his devil fruit is right now.
I don't think so either. I don't think anybody does, right?
No, I mean, Luffy definitely doesn't. He's still out there yelling gum gum, and he can imagine whatever he wants.
Yeah, and, like, it was funny, like, you just texted, like, goggles in the group chat or whatever, and I was like, what does that mean, bro? And he was like, One Piece. I was like, oh, so it's peak, huh?
Dude, Goggles Luffy was all over Twitter when that shit first happened in the manga.
I mean, it's the thing is like it feels like this episode was the Gear 5 animation was way crispier than like end of Wano Gear 5, right?
I wouldn't. It just a different take on it. Like the way I loved the way they did it in Wano. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, the way they did it in Wano was the sketch version or whatever, right?
Yeah, kind of like very. I don't want to say blurry lines, but very like. Sharp.
Yeah, and this version is like soft and colorful and bright and very like sharp too or whatever, crisp. So yeah. Like I like both of them, but like I said, this episode like it showed what they can do in Egghead with the Egghead visuals. So
yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, and like not even just Luffy's animation, like Lucci's animation during this fight was insane too. I mean, like there was like one scene where he literally looked like he was like a fireball cat or something like that. And that was really cool too.
Yeah, and they did the little flashback scene again, like the callback scene.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, like they done it so well, and I'm pretty sure they threw like in a lot of little Easter egg type things in the little what's it called? The little
impact frames?
Yeah, impact frames. So
yeah, I haven't seen anybody like who's like slowed everything down yet and looked at I gotta see if somebody's done that on Twitter or something.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's the crazy thing. Like in Wano, people was doing that like every week. And yeah. Now I feel like I wish people was doing it now, because I feel like we would be getting some hard frames in the Luffy part one, and now like this now. So
oh, definitely. I mean, I just love the fact that Luffy punched Lucci so hard he had PTSD back to Enies Lobby.
And it knocked his ass out, bro.
Yeah, dude.
It knocked him out of his form.
Yeah. So after that, we get a pretty long discussion about Vegapunk, the Devil Fruits, all of this. And it starts with him confirming that Jinbei Seraphim, S-Shark, is using the swim fruit powers. And that puts Franky in like
shambles.
A very dark place, because like that's his brother's Devil Fruit. And if... if old Senor Pink died, I would be crying too. I mean, that is the most hard-boiled man in One Piece.
Is this the first time we actually heard where Senor Pink is?
Yeah, no, that was the first time we found out that he was in Impel Down, okay. Level 6. So it turns out that Vegapunk can make artificial devil fruits, but only Zoan types, like Momo with the artificial version of Kaido's fruit. That's a failure because the dragon's pink. And he's not sure if artificial devil fruits can awaken or not. We also learned that with a Paramecia type, if he can get their blood, he can unlock the bloodline elements and infuse them into this green blood, which all the Seraphim has. They like zoom in on S Snake, and you can see her arm is just a hollow tube of blood, green blood, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I hadn't really noticed that before, so...
I wonder where the muscles are, you know?
They don't need them, bro, when they got love.
But based on that, you can give these Seraphim Paramecia powers, even though you can't recreate the devil fruits. And that got me thinking, I think Tyler too, like, do you think that's like a weak spot for the Seraphim, is like that tube?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, like, if that's actually, like, breakable or whatever, or, like, if it's even, like, attainable to break. Because, I mean, what is their weak spot if that isn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they probably should have been designed to not have a weak spot, but that's just Vegapunk for you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be interesting to know, like, if he was looking out for himself. By creating a weak spot, you know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, if anybody was going to know it, it'd be Vegapunk, so.
Because maybe he knew the day would come when he would, you know, be hunted down or whatever, so maybe he made a way to help himself out, so.
Yeah, maybe. And we also learned that he failed to recreate the Logia-type powers. So those are still out of the realm of modern Vegapunk science.
Yeah, but I think he also said that with a lot of time and money, he could probably figure it out.
I mean, he's the smartest man in the world. It makes sense.
Oh, I was laughing at that because ain't that what all scientists think, researchers? Yeah. So.
Hey man, they made an atom. They've done a lot of crazy shit. I'm not gonna put it past them. Put a man on the moon. They made an atom bomb. They can do anything.
Yeah. So give them money, give them time. We got. Yeah.
So one thing we learned too is so Sentomaru had asked S Shark to get Franky, Chopper, and the very beat up, probably dead Atlas up to the Labio phase, and she's leading them to the vacuum rocket to go up to the cloud portion of this island. And we kind of notice that she has emotions similar to Hancock during this, because she's getting all blushy face when she hears hears Luffy's name and stuff. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. And like coming off of that as well, if they have emotions, like, do we think there's a chance that like them that will come into play in the future, like them having emotions and them using it to make their own decisions sometime or another? Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't know. Maybe like if they can break through like the authority chain, like they could, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm just curious, like if that's even possible, you know, for like the seraphims or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what, what's his name? Kuma did? Kinda?
Hasn't
he done some shit like that?
I'm not going to go into it.
Yeah, the lines blur too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Very recent chapters. Not going to go into it.
Yeah. Okay. it makes sense. So.
I don't remember what I knew before reading them.
I love that. Okay. But yeah, it's just something I thought about. Like, you get in like all kinds of, you know, American movies or whatever, like the robots are able to use emotions, and then they you know, use that to, I guess, make their own decisions before
turn into Terminators.
Yeah, and then they take over the world type shit, you know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see if like that actually happens. They're able to use their emotions to make decisions that go against the orders that they received. So,
yeah, well, I wouldn't worry about it too much in our lifetime, but
yeah,
AI is progressing really quickly, but seeing the robots, I'm not too worried about it. But after that, Luffy does this really funny move where he uses the vacuum tube and basically turns it into a slingshot and launches himself into the vacuum rocket right when it's about to leave. And we get to see old man Luffy come back. As we know, when Luffy doesn't eat after using Gear 5, he basically shrivels up and dies.
Well, he don't die, but he almost dies.
And he turns into a 95-year-old man who needs a walker.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, I don't think we really got to see it after Wano or whatever, after his last one. But how long do you think he has to rest in order to be back in like fighting shape or like normal shape?
I think he just needs to eat some meat, man. Let's be honest here. It's Luffy.
Well, good thing they're on Egghead. They can just like conjure up meat wherever, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they got one of those fancy vending machines up in the lab, you know? I mean, every time Luffy's gone down, all he has had to do is eat some meat and he's back up and ready to rock.
Yeah, I feel that.
So after that, the final scene we get on the Fabio phase of Egghead is Sentomaru looking up at Lucci, who's back in his human form because he just got his ass whooped. And Sentomaru passes out, which means that CP0 now has the Seraphims under their control. And we find out that Zoro's still hanging out on the ship.
Well, chilling. I mean, we don't really see Zoro on the ship, but I was thinking to myself, like, wait, everybody's up top.
Oh,
everybody's
you're right, up you're top. Right, sorry.
Everybody's up top. The Seraphims and CP0 is down at the bottom still, but Zoro's still down at the bottom. So, like, what is going to happen? Do you think Zoro's going to figure out like something fishy going on, or you think they're going to go find Zoro?
I think Zoro being Zoro is going to go look for Luffy and everyone, and he's going to walk right into CP0.
Yeah, it's going to be fun because Zoro's just been probably taking a nap on the
100%.
So,
but the minute he gets ready to make some moves, he's going to walk in the wrong direction.
He's gonna get freaking lost, bro. So I don't know, it's gonna be fun, but yeah, I thought about that. I was like, Zoro is still down there not knowing what the hell is going on. I wonder what's gonna happen. You gotta let him cook. That's all I know.
Definitely. Did you watch the teaser for next week for One Piece?
No.
Okay, I'm just curious if we're gonna get a filler episode or not. It's been like every other week, it feels like.
Oh, so did it seem like one?
No, I don't know. I was just asking. I didn't check it out.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I didn't check it out either. So, I mean, who knows? We might go back to freaking, whatever the name is, Blackbeard or whoever's fighting. I forget.
Oh, true. Yeah. We got to get back to Blackbeard versus Law.
Yeah. So we haven't seen what's going on over there yet. I mean, the conclusion of it yet. So,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. We got to get it sometime or another. So,
yeah. Or they just forget about it, you know? Sorry. But awesome, guys. Hope you enjoyed this week's weekly rundown. Like I said, the DGEN episode is going to be dropping a day late-ish, just because I got to get out of town for work. What we're going to be doing is, Todd, we're doing what I talked about, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to be doing is we're going to be taking some of our favorite childhood cartoons and reimagining them as anime. So that's going to be really fun. Think your Cartoon Network, your Nickelodeon shows that weren't anime, that classic 90s, I guess, because we're old.
Yeah.
Cartoons. Maybe we'll throw some 2000s ones in there. I don't know. I haven't thought about what I'm going to talk about yet.
I've got some ideas of what I'm going to talk about. So, like, expect some 90s shit. So,
I don't know if
I watched a whole lot of 2000s shit. So,
yeah, that was when I made my jump to anime, I feel like. But I got 8 hours on a plane, so I got plenty of time to figure it out. If you have any questions, comments, you want to talk about the podcast, jump in our Discord, linktree.com/animedegens, and we'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Later.